member of the International Accounting Standards Board, and Bob was really one of the early supporters. I'm not 10 years, over 10 years at the ISB or the old ISC, and he was one of the early supporters of XBL. It was always easy to talk to him. Besides being on the board, he's also the chairman of IFRIC, which stands for International Financial Reporting Interpretations Committee. I think I've got it right. And looking at his background also, he was a CFO, similar to what I've done, so it's easy to talk to him, and he understands you know, how to implement XBL and get it together with IFRC, the International Financial Reporting Standards. And that's, from his interpretation standpoint, it's important because we are working together with a FASB to look at definitions, to look at interpretations, because that's after we have finished both the taxonomies, the US one and update ours, the next area where we really have to take a hard look at the interpretations of these elements. With that, Bob, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Kurt. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It really is a pleasure for me to be here with you today. Normally when I come to these conferences and discuss financial reporting, I'm introduced as the priest who's coming out of the temple, but today I can see that I'm merely an evangelist like the rest of the people in the room. Just to get a plug in, of course, for my own country and its background, we may not be as far developed as many others, but in South Africa, the first company that filed financial statements in compliance with IFRS and using XBRL took place last year. It was coincidentally the same company, the JSE Securities Exchange Limited, that actually runs the stock exchange, so they perhaps had a vested interest in making sure that they were demonstrating some leadership there. But certainly, XBRL seems to be the way of the future. But why am I here? What is my role today? Well, we've got a lot of acronyms within the ISB world, the IFRS world. I'd just like to take a couple of moments to explain some of those and perhaps reduce some of the myths that might surround us. But really what I want to focus on is why the IFRS in the future could make a difference to the work that you're doing currently, how it can improve your work, and also, more importantly, how you can improve the quality of our work as well. 10 years ago, there was only a single set of global financial reporting standards. That was US GAAP. But much has changed over the years. And for the listed company, for the securities markets, there are now two. I wouldn't like to say that there are two competing GAAPs, because we do try to converge with our American cousins. We have one or two differences, but they really are at points of detail, not at points of direction. But our objective is to develop, in the public interest, a single set of high-quality, understandable global financial reporting standards for use in the world's capital markets. So our focus is really on a very small section of the world, but a very important section of the world. But our standards aren't just used by listed companies, they're used as the basis for many other national GAAPs around the world, and they're also used as the basis for public corporations. So the public sector, as well as the private sector, the large company sector, as well as the small company sector, all have an interest in what the ISB is doing. Now, around the world, we like to claim that there are 100 countries that permit or require the use of IFRS in some form or another, but increasingly, the use of information, required information for databases, is going to overtake that focus on just adoption of IFRS and drill down more into how useful the information that can be produced by IFRS is going to be for purposes other than just pure financial reporting. Much of that depends on regulators in your individual jurisdictions, but also the needs of the consumers of that information who will drive it further forward. Later on in the tracks, those who are looking at the financial reporting tracks will have an opportunity to look at how equity analysts view the information and also how credit rating agencies view the information and find it of benefit to them. Now, I did say that we like to converge with our American cousins at the FASB, but I have to mention one statistic that came up in 2006, is that there are more listed companies on securities exchanges around the world that now use IFRS as their primary financial reporting medium than use US GAAP. We don't regard that as a single success factor, but it's an indication of the greater responsibility that we at the ISB have to bear. So what is the ISB? Kurt mentioned 10 years ago he was with an organization called the IASC. In 2000, that organization was disbanded and the trustees were established to form a foundation, the ISC Foundation, which then guided the development of what became the ISB, the body that I joined in 2001, and also has a significant role in encouraging the development of XBRL. We are regarded at the ISB as being accounting nerds, the technicians who understand the debits and credits but haven't much comprehension of anything else in the real world. Well, you can judge for yourself based on our performance. But the organization is subject to fairly rigid Chinese walls so that we focus our attention, or at least I focus my attention, on financial reporting issues, the principles and the application of those, and others are responsible for the technologies that can be used to deliver that information. But the foundation has a responsibility for a high level of public oversight over our activities, that we have a very full, transparent due process that we need to follow, and the trustees are very careful to make sure that we adhere to that. We like to think that we're responsive to our constituents' needs, but of course our constituents react in a variety of different ways. I would say the majority dislike what we're doing because it's a form of change. The 2% that do support the change have different views on whether the change is good or whether it's bad. So we need to consider the needs of the community. Now, we broadly focus on our responsibility towards those who use the information for making capital allocation decisions, debt or equity investors primarily, lenders who rely on general purpose financial reporting. That's our focus. So what is the role of the ISB and XBRL? But the initiative on XBRL started because the trustees and others realized that there was going to be a development in the way that financial information was delivered, and adding some discipline, some understanding and some rigidity into the development of the required disclosures under IFRS could in fact be complementary to the objectives of both the foundation in XBRL and the foundation with regard to financial reporting. Rather than have, in the 100 countries around the world, 100 different taxonomies dealing with the local dialects of IFRS, surely it was far better for the foundation to invest resources to make a commitment towards developing a single taxonomy for IFRS that could then be used as the basis for local extensions in the various jurisdictions. It would also, in the early stages, encourage the use of IFRS because there was a delivery mechanism being developed in conjunction with it. So this level of awareness of XBRL is not something new within the ISB, but it's something that is receiving increasing attention. I'll come back to that in a few minutes when I talk about one of the projects that we have on our technical agenda. But what's important is that we have a high caliber and professional team of people that both work within the foundation on XBRL work and also within the IFRS taxonomy working group. People who are leaders in their particular field, experts in the application of the technology, particularly to build relationships with the software companies so that we know that the product can be rolled out, but importantly to speak with, to consult with jurisdictional leaders around the world to make sure that the views of all of our constituents can be heard and can be encouraged. I include the next slide not because I want to explain it to you in detail. This is the improvements project for our XBRL team at the moment, but it always reminds me that when we start in developing financial reporting standards, people agree with us that we've got the principles right. That's the blue dot right at the center. The problem comes as you go further and further out, and I regard this something as being like the nerve endings. The red bits are the ones where we cause the greatest degree of aggregation, aggravation to our constituents, and the items that they dislike us for most. But nevertheless, it's important that we reach down into all of the areas. As I said, 10 years ago, when US GAAP was the only global standard, there were a number of companies that were using what was then called IS, or IFRS reporting, including my own company back in Johannesburg. But we agreed with principles then because there were not very many rules that inhibited the application of the standard. As time has gone by, and as we now have tens of thousands of users of IFRS, particularly since 2005, it's become apparent that there are many more questions that need to be asked on the same standards that people accepted happily before. And this increasing request for interpretation, for application guidance, to feed the needs of the hungry, to tell them what should and should not be done, is really because the structure of the standards has deviated from the simple logical principles into permitting a variety of exceptions and the creation of arbitrary rules. And that, from a technology point of view, is even more difficult. So what is the ISB doing about all of this? Well, some think that we do nothing but come around to conferences and make speeches about all the good things that we have done, but in fact we focus on a huge effort to try and overhaul on a continuous basis the quality of our financial reporting standards for the benefit of the people that use them. That means we look at things in a variety of different ways. The conceptual framework, which shouldn't affect too many people and won't affect people too soon. This is described as being a project that will take 5 years. We said 5 years because if we say it's any longer, the staff would leave because they'd become demotivated in not being able to see the end. We do know, of course, based on experience, that any project takes twice as long to complete as the original expectation. So it's a 10-year project, which takes it well beyond my lifetime as a standard setter. However, in reality, because we think it's going to be 10 years before it's completed, that means it won't be finished in 20 years' time from now. But don't tell the staff. Conceptual framework is important because it deals with primary definitions of elements. The debits and credits that were established 500 years ago, and we're still arguing today whether a credit is really revenue, whether it's a liability, or whether it's equity. Simple thing, but it has huge impact on the way in which that is presented in financial information. But we're dealing very often with more important things, recognition and measurement. What things, if they meet the definition of an asset or a liability, a revenue or an expense, should be recognized in financial statements and what shouldn't, and how should we measure those? Not only initially, but also subsequently. The next time an entity reports, should they be changed? But of more importance now is not just the recognition and measurement, but is the presentation and display of this information. I'll come back to that, as I say, in the project I'm going to describe on financial statement presentation. But one of the elements of our conceptual framework discussion is going to focus on the concepts that will underpin disclosure of financial information. So for the first time, we'll be able to point to a reason why we've required a disclosure, and not merely that it was always given before, so the analysts don't want to give it up, but we need to move forward into new forms of disclosure to extend the range of data points that need to be described in financial reports. But we have a continuing need for what I call repairs and maintenance, as people find aberrations in the application of the standards against either existing practice or new developing practice, that we need to work on that to modify it. Interpretation and application through the work of the IFRIC, the Interpretations Committee, is important to deal with what's happening in practice and where there are divergent interpretations and applications of what seem to be clear descriptions in the financial reporting standards. All of this is important to you because it has an impact on the quality of the information that can be produced by interactive data reporting. If the data that's put into the system is inconsistent and divergent to begin with, then the quality of the analysis is going to be reduced even before the process begins. Now, I did mention earlier that we are focusing our attention on IFRS for the securities markets, but it's not escaped our notice that many of the 100 countries around the world, and a few others as well, have actually used our standards, adapted them, or perhaps unkindly plagiarized them, by making modifications to change them so that they're suitable for use for smaller businesses with different financial reporting objectives in their own jurisdictions. They do this because it's a resource that they can take from without having to develop their own body of standard setters. They merely take what is provided at the center and make modifications. Not entirely that different from national jurisdictions developing their own extensions to XBRL taxonomies. But as you've seen the statistics, Spain this morning is not untypical that we would say across the world at least 95% of economic activity is handled by SMEs, entities that are not part of the public securities market domain. So it's a very important area to focus on, and that's why we've published just recently an exposure draft of a proposed set of standards, complete standards, addressing the needs of SMEs, both by the SMEs themselves and the users of their financial reports. It's been developed from the same conceptual framework as full IFRS, but it has different requirements, in some cases different recognition points. In many cases, the measurement is different, and certainly the disclosures are substantially reduced. But the basic framework still remains the same. So we hope that that will be useful for data aggregation for this huge and important sector of our economic global environment. Now, the one project that is likely to have the most significance for XBRL going forward is a project which has caused more angst among some of our constituents than any other project. So much so that we've had to change the name at least twice to try and protect the staff who were working on it from abusive telephone calls and even life-threatening threats. The financial statement presentation project is fairly simple. What financial statements should a company present? Well, the trouble at the moment is that people think in terms of pages. A balance sheet describes something. Maybe it's got two dimensions, so that at least is a start, but it's limited, and people who are talking about financial reporting, or have been before, are limited again by the constraints of what can be put onto a piece of paper. Now, some people think it might be a good idea not to have a standard format, but it has been a criticism of the adoption of IFRS around the world that the way that financial statements are presented gives an indication more of the geographical character of the company than it does of the industry that it's performing. So, for example, a French retailer and a French construction company, and dare I say it, even a French bank, probably have more in common than looking at any one of those industries across the world. Now, the reason for that is that our existing literature is not overly specific in how financial information should be formatted and presented. And perhaps those of you who are more accustomed to a very rigid legal environment that prescribes the lines in financial statements, this might come as a bit of a shock. But we do have some required lines and disclosures, as we call it, on the face of the financial statements. Some prescribed subtotals that say that certain things have to be added together and presented in those statements. But in between that, and making up those items, there is no real requirement. Everything of importance can be consigned into the notes. Now, there is a story going the rounds in the United Kingdom from, in fact, it's one of Europe's largest banks, from HSBC, who've produced their annual report. And as they proudly announced, that the annual report contains no pictures of any of their executives. Presumably, they didn't want to associate the pictures of the executives with the remuneration report so people could identify them. They also said that there are no voluntary disclosures, that these are purely disclosures that are mandated by IFRS. And the report, financial report, totals 454 pages. It weighs over 3 kilograms, and apparently there is a directive to the mail carriers that they may not take in a single mailbag more than 10 of these reports, because otherwise it risks permanent damage to the mailman. Now, if that isn't a damning condemnation of old-fashioned thinking and old-fashioned reporting, I don't know what is. So what are we looking at now? Well, for the first time, the ISB is allowed to consider financial reporting not constrained by the two-dimensional A4 or even A3 size of a piece of paper. The questions and concerns that have arisen before, that you can't require that on the face because it adds too many columns and it would make the typeface too small for people to read, or it would increase the cost of having to fold the paper, are not something that we have to listen to anymore. That provided the information is provided and can be accessed by some means, and ladies and gentlemen, that's up to you what that delivery mechanism is going to be, then we can exercise our minds to use some blue sky thinking to develop financial reporting that will actually serve the needs of those who use the financial statements. One of the things we thought would be quite interesting and helpful to people is to have financial statements that are cohesive, so that if you describe something as part of the financing of the business, in, for example, the statement of financial position or the balance sheet, then the related effects of that, the changes that take place in that financing, whether in the statement of income or in the cash flow statement or anywhere else in the financial statements, should be articulated in the same way. So there's cohesiveness throughout. Something is financing, it stays financing. Something is operating, it stays operating. Something's investing, then it stays investing. Now, we think it would be useful, of course, to have some basic description of what things go where. But to allow the opportunity for companies reporting through their own eyes, the way that they manage their business, to take some of these items and present them in their financial reports in the way that they see them. So things that might typically be classified as part of the operations of the business, in some circumstances could be considered merely to be an investment, that the holding of a significant stake in another company might be an extension of the business, it might be strategic, or it might simply be it's an opportunity to invest money and perhaps seek to make a profit out of the return on the investment rather than developing the business. So we leave it to the entity itself to be able to tell its own story. A little bit like the interactive demonstration earlier of GE presenting data that is specific to GE, so it tells the story that they want to portray. What's important, though, is that if the data is identified, is tagged, then the standard elements of the definition mean that others can take that information and reformat it so that it's useful in the way that they see the information. So you have the view through the eyes of management, but then also the ability to view it through the eyes of the credit rating agency or the lender. What's also particularly important about this is that at the moment, the data that goes into some of the items, key items, important metrics on the financial statements, like revenue, a simple thing like revenue, can include such a hodgepodge of different arbitrary accounting consequences that nobody's quite sure whether revenue really is increasing, decreasing, and at what rate, because nobody's quite sure what information is going in there. The opportunity that comes out of re-examining on a principle-based basis, on a cohesive basis, and on a logical identification basis, is that arbitrary allocation of data can be avoided. It can also be permitted through the eyes of management to aggregate data in a particular way, but then the data itself doesn't lie. You're not taking information from a paper-based report and putting it into an automated system. You're taking information directly at a low level to provide for the aggregation in the way that your users want to come up with this. Now, I mentioned that we received a lot of criticism about this project when it started. We used to call it reporting financial performance, and people objected because they said, how do standard setters possibly know anything about performance, judging by your own efforts over the years? We said, perhaps all the items that go into income, comprehensive income, should go in the same statement. And there was an outcry about that. No, they said, you can't put it all on a single page. You must put it on two pages, and preferably on two pages that don't face each other, so that people have to turn the page before they can see what's on the back. Not relevant. Really isn't required at all. But the concern is that if you don't have things on two pages, then this important but illusory metric called net income is going to disappear. Well, is it going to disappear? I don't think so. What I see happening out of our financial statement presentation project is a standard format with required subtotals so that people can understand what is contributed in terms of revenues, in terms of income, also in terms of assets and liabilities to the different parts of the whole business model. To provide the opportunity to disaggregate into the level of information that is important for users of those financial reports to understand the business risks that the entity is taking, so that they have an opportunity to make their own judgments about what the future might hold. Now, that data might be by nature of business, segment data as we have it at the moment. It might be information about the origin of the geographical operations. But if all of that information is made available, not on the face of the financial statements, but is required as part of the disclosure and presentation standards, then users have the opportunity to disaggregate in the way that suits them. The data elements themselves should be consistent, so the way in which your own models apply that data should give you consistent and comparable results. Different users, as you'll hear in the different tracks over the next couple of days, will have different needs. Some information is more important than others. We can't determine what is going to be particularly important to one group. What we do try and determine is what is important generally across all groups. And that's why some information that's required might not seem to be relevant to you, but is relevant to others. That's part of the total data set that we will be looking at. But a key thing, as I started off by mentioning, our cooperation and convergence activities with the FASB in the United States to achieve our objective of a single set of financial reporting standards in the world, we have to be responsive to the needs, the requirements, and perhaps not the whims, though, of others around the world. It means convergence. It doesn't mean selecting the conceptually correct solution today. It means working towards that, and working towards it in a way that achieves improvement consistently over time to improve the financial markets and the efficiency of the capital markets. In the same way, I think, in looking at the work on the differing taxonomies that exist at the moment, it's important that there is not a technological difference in the way that US GAAP and IFRS can be reported. There may be some minor differences in the way that some items are measured and reported, but the global markets have global investors who invest across boundaries, and we shouldn't be creating artificial boundaries for them. So it's important that we work towards converging our other taxonomies. And in that way, ladies and gentlemen, I think we can say this is the beginning of the end for paper-based reports. Thank you.